Today, on Off to the Races. Timonium kicks off with a bang. It's Travers Day at the spa. And much more. All coming up right now on Off to the Races.
We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com. And on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. My name's Frank Vespi, and for the next 60 minutes, we're going to be talking thoroughbred racing and breeding in Maryland, across the Mid-Atlantic, and around the country. Today's show, as always, powered by The Racing Biz. TheRacingBiz.com is the website. The social medias, they're all out there. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Look for at The Racing Biz. Also, pick up our free mobile app so you always have the latest Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding news with you on your mobile device. Great way to keep connected. We've got a great show today. You're going to want to stick around for this one. It's Travers Day at the spa. Seth Merrow going to join us to scope it out. We're also running the Timonium Distaff Stakes at the Big T. Come on out, enjoy the Maryland State Fair, some great racing. We're going to talk with trainer Jerry Robb about his Timonium Distaff hopeful Princess Kokochin. We learned this week of the passing of horseman Anthony Manganaro. His good friend, former Maryland Racing Commission chairman Michael Algio, going to join us to remember him. And his important behind-the-scenes role in some important Maryland racing business. Also this weekend, racing at Delaware, Colonial Downs, Charlestown. Speaking of Charlestown, they held their biggest day of racing last night. That night includes the Grade 3 Charlestown Oaks, now the richest sprint race for three-year-old fillies in the country, and also the million-dollar Grade 2 Charlestown Classic. The Oaks went to Vava.
And Vava swings out to the three path to put in her rally now as they come to the top of the stretch. They still have to get to Long Shot, Late Frost with a furlong left to go. Undervalued Asset set down, and Vava over the top is trying to close in. Undervalued Asset, here comes Vava, and at the rail, Late Frost, a thriller in the Oaks. Here's Vava! Vava rolls late to win it in the Oaks by just over a length.
It was the first stakes win and third win overall for the three-year-old Vava. She's trained by Cherie DeVoe for a partnership led by Belladonna Racing. Johnny Velasquez was in the irons. In the big one, the classic, Skippy Longstocking powered home much the best.
It's Skippy Longstocking, Tyler Gaffalione sitting chilly, yet to ask Skippy for his best. He comes to the top of the stretch with a four-length lead. Call Me Fast comes four wide off the turn. Dash Attack, Muad'Dib fights on, but as they come down to the 16th pole, it's Skippy Longstocking, and he's run them off their feet. Skippy Longstocking takes them all the way in the Charlestown Classic, romps home by five.
That win set off an emotional scene for trainer Safi Joseph Jr., his team, who trained the horse for Daniel Alonzo. A lot of hugging, a lot of excitement in the winner's circle, a little bit of beer spilled by one of the grooms, a lot of things going on, but it was an exciting moment for them and for owner Daniel Alonzo, who used that very word. He said it was so exciting to win this race. Tyler Gaffalione was in the irons. Tyler won a couple of races on the day, a couple of the big races. He also was aboard Society to win the pink ribbon. And in both races, it was kind of interesting. He went straight to the front. And I asked him about riding at a smaller track like Charleston. Here's what he had to say.
Honestly, I love coming here. I think this is my fourth time here. It's a really fun course to ride. Turns are tight, and when you got speed, it's a lot of fun.
That was Tyler Gaffalione talking about how much he enjoys coming to Charlestown. And, of course, why wouldn't he? He won the biggest race of the day and another $250,000 contest, so that always makes it fun. The sort of hearty laughter you heard there as he was finishing up his statement was a funny moment because he said, you know, when you got speed, and then he got this smile on his face, kind of like the cat that ate the canary, and and finish the statement that it's a lot of fun. So Tyler Gaffalione wins two. Skippy Longstocking gets the money in the grade two $1 million Charlestown Classic. Biggest day of the year. They handled about $8 million bucks at Charlestown yesterday. So it was plenty a big day out in the eastern panhandle of West Virginia. All right, now, as mentioned, we're going to have Wanamaker CEO Liza Hendricks on in a little bit. Former Maryland Racing Commission Chairman Michael Algio going to join us in the second half of the program. At the end of the hour, trainer John Robb, longtime Maryland stalwart, going to join me. It's an interesting conversation. We talk about his Timonium Distaff hopeful Princess Kokuchin, but kind of a wide-ranging conversation as well about some of the issues that he sees in racing these days. But before we get to any of that, right now, let's talk Travers with Seth Marrow. He's the founder of the Equidaily.com website, host of Racing Across America on OTB TV today. He's been up at Saratoga all meeting. Well, without further ado, here's Seth Marrow.
Seth, good morning. Welcome to Off to the Races. Thanks for spending some time with us here during the busy Saratoga meet. I wanted to ask you this. You've been up there all meet. We had you on a couple of weeks ago to talk about things, but it's been a bit of a challenging meet at Saratoga. There have been a bunch of breakdowns, including a couple pretty high-profile ones. There was the issue with the pick five and races coming off the turf. Just a bunch of things. What kind of is the atmosphere like? Does it still feel like Saratoga up there?
It always feels like Saratoga, but you nailed it. I mean, you're kind of alluding to it, and you're correct. As you walk around, you know, the past two or three weeks, as we got past the halfway point, the weather has been a huge issue, and there's been a lot of off-the-turf races. But then, you know, it's really unfortunate situation, and the test obviously took the air out of the building that day completely.
Sure.
So, yeah, as you walk around the track or even the city, there's a little bit of a different feel in that a lot of people will say, literally will say, what next? What's going to happen next? So it doesn't have quite the same enthusiasm, but it's still Saratoga. People still love it. There's still great racing. You come over and it still has the special sauce. The backyard is full, and it's young, old, it's men, women, and you go downtown and the people in the restaurant next year are talking about the double they hit today or the exact that they're going to play tomorrow. So it's still Saratoga, but clearly, I think you aptly put it, it's been a little bit challenging this year. I think the folks at NYRA would agree completely. There's been betting things and horse things and weather things, and so it's been challenging, but it is still fun, and we're now hitting the exclamation point of the meet with the Travers, and looking forward to that. And there's been great performances otherwise as well. Casa Creed for Lee Einsiedel was really good, winning a couple of stakes up here, including the grade one four-star Dave. That was fun. There have been other nice matchups, and expecting more of those on Saturday, certainly with the Travers in the undercard. Hopefully, fingers crossed, the Travers, you know, sorts out the three-year-old picture, but that's going to be the big question. Oh, the sales were also – sales, I think, kind of knocked it out of the park, too. I think both in sale down the street at the Basic Tipton Pavilion and the New York Bred sale did very well this year. So, you know, it's been a challenge, but there have been, as there always are at Saratoga, some notable high points as well.
It's funny you mentioned, you know, sitting at the restaurant and people talking about the double they're going to play or whatever. And I remember some years ago walking into Ciro's and into the restaurant portion, not the outdoor bar. And there was a guy sitting at the bar who was obviously a few cocktails ahead of me. And he was wearing a helmet and goggles and announcing a, you know, imaginary race. And everybody in the room was just kind of like, yeah, of course there's a guy announcing an imaginary race sitting at the bar.
So yes, that is also part of the charm. Okay. Yeah, there is a little bit of that as well. I mean, the social aspect is a big part of it. You know, you go over to Ciro's or down the street, to the Horseshoe, the two main post-track establishments. They're right in the neighborhood, but then downtown later. And then there are the charity events and whatnot. This past Tuesday, I was out at the Saratoga Winery, which is just outside town, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. had their annual event, which is really nice. It's casual, good food, but 500 people showed up. A lot of, you know, racing people, obviously, and a lot of racing fans. And that is, again, the social aspect is a big part of the season.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's turn to serious business here, or maybe not. It's horse racing after all. But the Travers is Saturday, the kind of highlight of the meet, the Midsummer Derby. And I guess my first question is, can you live with 7-5 on Forte? It feels a little short to me.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see how it shakes out, because Arcangelo is clearly going to take some money. Been working very well, and I'll tell people, a friend of mine up in the press box used to write for the Times Union, and now he's doing work for the Blood Horse, Tim Wilkin. Find his Twitter feed, if you haven't already seen it, scroll down to maybe a little less than a week ago. He has Arcangelo in the round pen out on the back stretch, bucking and kicking and obviously feeling very good. Workout reports are very good. I'm a little concerned about the layoff, though. I mean, let's pretend this is the Derby day. The layoff for Arcangelo would go back to a mid-February race, and I think in the Derby we would look at that askance, and so the layoff concerns me for Arcangelo. So I may tilt towards Forte a little bit, but you're absolutely right. I will also Disarm. If you're looking for an interesting play, I think Disarm is intriguing for Asmussen. And I'll probably, in some fashion, use both of those because of the price discrepancy that there will definitely be. Because you're right, Forte is not invincible, but has won 7 of 9. We have the winners of all 3 Triple Crown races in here, Forte not being one of them. So it's going to be totally intriguing in how the races run. But you're right, where they bet, because a short price on Forte probably isn't quite warranted, because I do think it's an interesting, fairly evenly matched field. Plus, you throw in that the 3-year-old stakes races this year that you would hope would define things have been unable to do so. So I don't know who we can expect the Travers to step up to the plate and make that mark on Saturday.
Yeah, if past is prologue here, it's going to be Scotland or somebody else.
We're
going to be going like, now what? And speaking of which, I mean, how do you see the pace shaking out? I think it's interesting to see National Treasure, they peel the blinkers off again. It's been on, off his whole career so far. That seems to suggest they may want to stalk the pace rather than be the pace. How do you see that shaking out, Seth?
I don't know if there's any real pace. I mean, I think if I had a horse that had some early speed, I might play into it. And so we'll see what they do. As you say, with the equipment change, do they dull that a little bit? Scotland was on the lead for the Curlin victory, but wasn't setting necessarily blazing fractions, but maybe an interesting player as well. But, yeah, there's not a lot of speed. Forte, I think, is interesting. Added the blinkers in the Jim Dandy and was kind of up attending the pace at least. And that, I would think, would be kind of the game plan again on Saturday. So we'll see. You know, you suss out the pace in a race like this and think you've nailed it, and then it all falls apart as they, you know, kind of go past you the first time in the mile and a quarter in the stretch. But it looks like National Treasure of Scotland has the opportunity. And if I felt like I broke from the gate and had that opportunity, I would take it if I was on either of those horses.
Talking with Seth Marrow of Equidaily.com and Capital OTB TV, host of Racing Across America, handicapper, Saratoga guy. Seth, let's spin back a couple of races. Wanted to talk with you about the Grade 1 Forego. There's, 5 Grade 1 races on the docket Saturday at the Spa. What a curious race this is. You've got like kind of the two beasts of the sprint division in Gunite and Elite Power, and then a couple other horses you're kind of just scratching your head about. What do you make of the Forego?
I like Gunite in the Vanderbilt earlier in the meet, and, you know, mid-stretch, late, a few yards before the wire, I was kind of going to the window, and then Elite Power just kind of pinned his ears back and ran him down. I mean, it was a fabulous race where, you know, the old Tom Durkin line, two performances too good to have a loser. But I'm going to stick with Gunite, I think, on Saturday. I had Tyler Gaffleone on television with me on Thursday, and he kind of said he thought he moved maybe a little too early with Gunite. So I'll be interested to see what he does on Saturday afternoon with Gunite. But I'm going to look for him to maybe turn the tables. But that performance last time from Elite Power says he's very dangerous. And you alluded to some of the others. I talked to Lee Einsiedler, the owner of High Oak, a couple of days ago in the clubhouse. I ran by him, and he said, oh, we're going in the four-go. Lee is an enthusiastic guy, and he's always willing to take the shot. But he admitted, kind of, when they looked and saw it was going to be a smaller field, they were going to take their shot in here. And, you know, you wind up with some grade one black type on the page. That can't hurt if you finish underneath. To me, it looks like, boy, it's going to be between Gunite and Elite Power, though. And I'm just hoping for another ding-dong battle.
Yeah, I mean, I we're all hoping for that. I mean, as you and I were talking off air, you know, kind of when was the last time there was a race where Chad Brown has a horse who's 12-1 and Belmont's 30-1? So,
yeah,
not a thing we see every day. Of course, Belmont is also 1-2 with Elite Power, so that might make things a little better for him. All right, let's also just look ahead a little bit to the Sword Dancer on the turf, mile and a half, grade one on the turf, and an old familiar veteran among the entrants in this one, Seth.
Yeah, Channel Maker's in here, and that's what I find it. You know, Saratoga, I'm a handicapper and a better, love to go to the track and handicap and solve the puzzle and maybe cash some tickets, but also on the, you know, the media side of things, I love great stories, and Saratoga's always full of them. On the human side, on the equine side, and Channel Maker at 9 years old is one of those fun stories. If he wins this, he would have two graded stakes races at Saratoga on his resume at 9 years old. I had Dave Grunder from the Racing Forum on TV with me a couple of days ago, and he mentioned, I hadn't realized it, he's running this race six times, which is just insane. So, and won once. So Channel Maker is going to be interesting off the win a few weeks ago in the Bowling Green. But I thought Pioneering Spirit was interesting. Linda Rice having a very good meet. She's cooled down slightly since a crazy hot start, but she's still going very well. But they scratched from the John's Call on Wednesday to go in here. And I thought Pioneering Spirit a little bit intriguing in a race that I don't think anybody's jumping off the page. I mentioned Dave Grenick. He thought Stone Age off the February layoff for Chad Brown could be interesting. And if not today, he said, watch out for that one, you know, heading towards the Breeders' Cup. But intriguing race, as I say, with the storyline being the 9-year-old Channel Maker.
Yeah, now Channel Maker, he's kind of, you know, veering into four-star Dave territory a little bit,
yeah,
isn't he, at this point?
Absolutely. You wind up in a Saratoga Stakes six times and, you know, 10 wins, 54 starts, well over $3 million. I mean, we're verging on $4 million. That's just incredible for a 9-year-old hard knocker like that. This is the kind of horse that you would love to own, to be able to come up to Saratoga and root him in some graded stakes at Saratoga year after year after year and get enough wins that you have $4 million in the bank. Again, great storyline there.
Yeah, good stuff for sure. All right, so it's Pioneering Spirit to win the Sword Dancer, says Seth Marrow. Seth, last thing, and I'll let you go. Understand you bumped into a friend of mine the other day. Let's give a little shout-out to our now mutual friend, Leon Aronowitz.
I was amazed, though. Ran into him, and the first thing, he kind of spotted me and, hey, tell Frank Vespi I taught him everything he knows. And then obviously drew me over, and we introduced ourselves. I mean, he recognized me from TV. He's a local guy, and he talked about having you in the house to have some cocktails and talk horse racing years ago. And I laughed and immediately sent you a text, and you were kind of surprised that I'd run into him. But that's the beauty of Saratoga. Saratoga is just a lot of fun. I see more people here that I know from grade school or high school or whatever, and then meet a lot of fun new people as well. And that was one of them the other day.
Yeah, it is quite a place in that regard. All right, Seth Merrill, thanks so much for joining us here on Off to the Races. Good luck at the windows today.
Appreciate it, Frank, and good luck to everybody listening as well.
Interesting stuff there from Seth Merrill. Travers coming up later this afternoon. Who do you got? Who do you got in the Travers? You like the Kentucky Derby winner, Mage? Preakness winner, National Treasure? Belmont Stakes winner, Arcangelo? Or the horse that would have been favoring all those races probably if he'd posted? He was going to be the Derby favorite. Would have been the Preakness favorite if he posted. He was the Belmont favorite when he finished second to Arcangelo, finding the 12 furlongs off a lengthy break a little bit too much to handle. But that's Forte. Forte going to be the favorite here in the Travers. A really interesting contest coming up later this afternoon. So, turning our attention a little bit more locally, we've got Liza Hendricks is going to be up with us in a moment. A little bit later down the road, going to have Michael Algio, former chairman of the Maryland Racing Commission, joining me, remembering his good friend Anthony Manganiero. And Anthony's important behind the scenes role here in Maryland. You'll hear about that coming up in, you know, 5 or 6 minutes. And following that, gonna talk about Timonium a little bit. Timonium Distaff Stakes taking place this afternoon. Trainer John Robb gonna join me and talk to me about his hopeful in that race. That's Princess Kokachin. So a lot of things still to come here on Off to the Races. But now wanted to turn our attention. There's a Wanamakers.com online horse auction coming up later this week. And Wanamakers CEO Liza Hendricks joins me right now.
Liza, good morning. Thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. Another Wanamakers.com online horse auction upon us. And it looks like about one of the biggest and certainly one of the most interesting catalogs we've seen.
Thank you, Frank. Yeah, it's exciting. You know, it's slowly growing and becoming more popular, and a lot of quality in this catalog. So I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, let's start. I mean, there's three, I think, really interesting mares. Let's start with what looks to be maybe the biggest ticket item. That's Roaming.
Correct. Yeah. She's being offered by Hunter Valley in Kentucky. So it's great to see them putting horses up and big consigners stepping in and getting used to the online auctions. And Roaming's 11, so nice young broodmare. She's been sold as Daredevil, and she's produced two winners so far from three runners, and her offspring selling to up to 425,000. So she produces beautiful foals, and I saw her foal this year actually, and they're just nice, correct, great bodied foals. So excited to have her on sale.
And for people who don't remember, Daredevil, who's returning to the U.S., got some real runners when he was here previously, including the Preakness winning filly Swiss Skydiver, as well as She Dares the Devil.
So his first crop back in the U.S. are yearlings now, and I saw a lot of his foals in November last year and loved all of them. Actually recommended my mom to breed one to Daredevil as well. So I think we're gonna see some great horses from him back in the U.S. as well.
And he's got a bunch coming up in the Keeneland yearling sale in September, so maybe an opportunity to kind of get in on the ground floor here. Now, Liza, tell us about a couple of the other interesting broodmares you've got here. You've got a couple, I know, with freshman sires.
Yeah, we have some exciting ones in foal to you know, really hot upcoming freshman sires. Marriage is in foal to Flame Away, and Flame Away just had the Sorrento winner with Dreamfire. And people are getting really excited about Flame Away. We saw them sell great up here at the New York bred sale. There were some great Flame Away foals up here. And then we also have a mare in foal to Matoli, who's third on the freshman sire list. So some exciting prospects.
Yeah, I'm interested to see the Matolis. He was an absolute rocket ship on the racetrack, so it'll be fun to see those come along. Now, give us the kind of the particulars of the sale. If I'm hearing this and I say, gee, these sound like interesting horses, and of course you also have a bunch of, you got some weanlings and yearlings and other horses of racing age and other broodmares and whatnot, but if I'm interested and I think maybe I want one of these, what do I need to do?
You just need to go to Wanamakers.com and you it's a simple registration. You put in your name and email, and then you're all set to bid. And the bidding is on August 31st, opens at 8 a.m. and closes at 5 p.m. Eastern.
August 31st, so coming up, end of the week, coming up on Thursday, bidding kicks off. And give us those dates and times again one more time.
Yep, so bidding on August 31st from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern.
August 31st, 8 to 5, Wanamakers.com is the website. Roaming in full of Daredevil, Marriage in full of Flameaway, Green Breeze in full to Mattoli, three of the most interesting broodmare prospects available in Wanamakers.com. It's the website. Liza Hendricks, thank you so much for joining me here on Off to the Races.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks so much.
Our thanks to Liza Hendricks, Wanamakers.com, online horse auction. Happening later this week, check it out, Wanamakers.com. Now, if you follow racing, or really even if you don't, you may have noted the passing of Anthony Manganiero. Anthony was a Massachusetts guy originally, came to live in the Baltimore area, made multiple fortunes in business, later turned his attention to horse racing. He was part owner of Kentucky Derby winner Always Dreaming. He sort of started and turned Sienna Farm into kind of a show place. And a thing that you're not seeing much in the obits, but he was an important part of the, an important but behind the scenes part of the negotiations that led to the deal between the Stronach Group, which owns Laurel and Pimlico, and the city of Baltimore, that ultimately led to the deal that the legislature blessed in 2020 that would have rejuvenated both Pimlico as the longtime future home of the Preakness and Laurel Park as the kind of locus of Maryland racing going forward. Now, that deal has gone sideways for a variety of reasons, but Anthony Manganiero played a very important role behind the scenes advising the city. I wanted to kind of bring that to the fore here by bringing in Anthony's close friend, the former chairman of the Maryland Racing Commission and a friend of this program over the years, Michael Algio. Michael is going to join me right now to remember his good friend, Anthony Manganiero.
Michael Algio joining me here. Michael, good morning. Thanks for joining me on Off to the Races. I want to start with this. I know you were close with Anthony Manganiero, and I do want to explore in a moment his role in Maryland, which was very much behind the scenes, but also very important, kind of integral to how the plans around Laurel and Pimlico come together. But I want to start with this. How did you first meet him?
Well, Frank, first of all, thank you again for having me on your show. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. I first met Anthony in 2017. I had just been appointed the previous December as chairman of the Racing Commission. And this was my first Preakness. And as Sal Sinatra described me, I was like a kid in a candy store. This was just an exciting time. Always Dreaming had just won the Kentucky Derby. And I had the great honor of meeting Always Dreaming and Todd Fletcher on a Thursday before the race. And I mean, it was just fun. It was exciting. And the day before the Preakness, I got a phone call from a friend that said, "Hey, do you know who Anthony Manganiero is?" And I said, "No, I have no idea." And they said, "Well, he owns Sienna Farm in Kentucky, and he is part owner of Always Dreaming, and he would like to meet you." And I said, "Great." So they said, "Well, just stop by his tent on the infield the day of the Preakness." So I did. My wife Susan and I went over into the infield, and there's a tent, Sienna Farm tent. And I went up and I said, "Hi, my name's Michael Algio, and I'm supposed to meet Anthony Manganiero here." And the woman said, "Well, do you have an invitation?" And I said, well, no, ma'am, I don't have an invitation. She said, well, I'm very sorry, but we can't let you in. So I said, okay, all right, thank you very much. And Susan and I started to walk away, and I hear this booming voice from behind me go, oh, great. Oh, that's great. Turn away the chairman of the Maryland Racing Commission. And I turned around, and he said, Michael, I'm Anthony McNamara. Come on in. And that was my first meeting with a man who became a very, very, very dear friend. He was a mentor, an incredibly brilliant, bright human being. And as I said to you previously, Frank, the one thing that struck me the most about Anthony McNamara has been, always will be, his humility. I will say this, he had his hand in many, many things. Incredibly successful businessman. I don't have any friends who are billionaires. He was my one billionaire friend, and I said I didn't do well at that, but I know there's a lot of zeros after dollars, but he never, ever came across like that. He was just a very, very down-to-earth, humble human being, and we lost a giant. I tell you, he loved the industry. He loved people. He was a loyal friend, and it's been a very tough week. It really has been.
You posted something on Facebook that I think might encapsulate how I think you saw him a little bit, which we might call the parable of the spoons. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, and you know, when I went down, you met with Anthony. I met him down at his farm, Santa Farm, back in 2018. And when you met with him, it was like going to a think tank. I mean, truly, you'd sit out on his front porch, absolutely stunningly beautiful view of Kentucky farm. It was just gorgeous. And we chatted about life. We chatted about family. We chatted about faith. We chatted about his business, and we chatted about horse racing. And in talking about horse racing and talking about what I've tried to emphasize when I was chairman about working together, openness and transparency. And that was one of the parables that he shared with me. And I won't get into the parable. It's there, but it basically, the concept is that we go further. We sustain ourselves when we feed each other, when we help each other. And the message was that's how Maryland Racing will continue to thrive and survive if we adopt the parable of the spoons, that we feed each other, that we help each other. I had never heard the parable before, but it stuck with me. And he was a great storyteller, and it came from the heart. It really did. And so, and that's how he lived his life from, you know, a billionaire. But you think, you know, when you talk about money, immediately you sense selfishness and advancement of one's own self. And that was not him. He was a person who cared tremendously about those he loved, his family, his friends, and others. And that's how he lived his life.
Talking with Michael Algio, former chairman of the Maryland Racing Commission, about his friend Anthony Manganaro, who passed away this past weekend. And Joe DeFrancis told me this story involving him, Michael. So Joe was in Europe. He gets a call. This is in 2019, a little bit before the Preakness that year. And at that point, if you recall, the Strana Group that owns the Maryland Jockey Club and the city of Baltimore were at Swords Point. And, you know, there were lawsuits flying around. It was a complete debacle. And Joe gave
an interview. I remember well.
Joe gave an interview to the Baltimore Sun where he said the amount of money they're talking about to repair Pimlico is way too much. You don't need that much money. You need much less. What you do is you make kind of a modular Pimlico that you build out, and this is how you do it. And the way he told the story was within 24 hours, he received two phone calls. One was from Alan Rifkin, an attorney representing the Stronach Group, and one was from Anthony Manganiello, who was working sort of deeply behind the scenes with Baltimore City. Talk about how this was sort of the first step towards kind of the achievement of detente and the beginning of efforts to work together between the Stronach Group and the city and the horsemen. Talk about kind of what happened there.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you captured it very, very well. The acrimony between the stakeholders and the city and the Stronach Group back then, and it was palpable. I mean, it was getting ugly, and it was not good. It was not good for the future of Maryland racing. As you know, there was an effort, and again, I'm not going to ascribe blame or fault here, but there was an effort to move the Preakness to Laurel. And for obvious reasons, the city of Baltimore and their legislators were very upset and opposed to that, given the great history of Pimlico and the Preakness, and statutory authority saying the Preakness could not be moved, and also the great history of Pimlico being the second oldest racetrack in the country. So there was a lot of passion involved. In terms of the effort to try to keep the Preakness and Pimlico alive. And in order to do that, unfortunately, the eminent domain litigation was initiated by the city of Baltimore against the Stronach Group, and all of a sudden we have a dilemma. People are fighting, families suing each other. It was just awful. It was ugly. And then behind the scenes, Anthony Manganiello, Alan Foreman, Alan Rifkin, and Bill Cole got together and sat down and hammered out this idea of turning, making Pimlico a year-round facility in the sense of you would only have the Preakness, the two-week festival running there, but that the new redevelopment plan envisioned uniting, if you will, Park Heights with the other areas of Baltimore, and making it a community area instead of a divider between communities. And the idea was that Lifebridge was going to be involved. You would have offices, you'd have buildings, you would have beautiful facilities, year-round facilities, soccer fields, and then you would have the track brought in for that two-week festival. This was a vision that Anthony had adopted from Siena, Italy, and he had shown me this vision. This is what he thought could be done to bring the communities together. And then ultimately, the Maryland Stadium Authority sat down trying to figure out what plan to adopt. And once the folks behind the scenes had worked out the redevelopment plan, and much credit. I remember going to the Maryland Million the year that this agreement got worked out. And the excitement in the horse racing community about this is finally getting resolved. And I know that there are people that are opposed to the fashion in which it was done, and we needed to save Pimlico. I get that. I appreciate it. I understand it. But this was what was perceived back then as the way to save Maryland racing. So kudos to all of those folks that made this happen. Mayor Jack Young, you know the story, Mayor Jack Young at the Preakness met with Belinda, and they sat down and said, can we work this stuff out? The suit, the eminent domain suit, was dismissed, and all of a sudden off we go, and we have this great vision for the future. And then sadly, COVID hit and everything went sour, cost overruns. The Stadium Authority was never happy with the information. People were not providing the necessary numbers, and there was cost overruns, and it just died on the vine, which is sad. But you know, now we're moving on to the new direction as we go forward. So that's but Anthony Manganiello And he never liked, I would say, Anthony, people should know that you were very much a player in this effort to try to save Maryland Racing. In reality, he didn't want to be known for that. He loved being behind the scenes. He loved sharing his ideas, his thoughts. I mean, he is one of the most brilliant people I have ever met. His sense of how Maryland Racing and racing in general could be saved moving forward. I know he was a big proponent of HISA. He felt very strongly that we needed a national oversight board to help control and the perception of racing throughout the country. I know that obviously there's a lot of people that disagree with that, but he was a big proponent of that. And then he cared about people. I mean, when you met him, he would just share stories of things that happened to him in his life as a young boy, having been raised in a poor area outside of Boston, and just became a successful businessman. A graduate of Northeastern University. He became he's a benefactor of the Port Scholars Program at Northeastern, earned an honorary doctorate at Northeastern. The beautiful tribute that they just put out this past week in their Northeastern Global News just raved about what kind of human being he was. I'll tell you another story, real quick story, Frank, was when, as you know, I teach law school. I teach in the trial advocacy program at American University. And several years ago, they came to me because they were doing a mock trial course. And the case study involved a racetrack being sued because of an injury to a jockey. And the dean and the head of the program asked me if I could reach out to see if people would sponsor the mock trial program to provide awards for those that won in the mock trial. And, of course, to nobody's surprise, Sienna Farm and Anthony Manganiello sponsored that mock trial, along with several other folks. So that's who he was. He was just an incredible human being. And I will tell you, we have lost this world, this universe has lost a good man.
One last question, and I'll let you go. When I spoke with Anthony in the sort of aftermath of the legislation that got passed in 2020 for the redevelopment of Laurel and Pimlico, I said, what did you need, you know, what sort of did the players need to accomplish this? And he said, well, you needed the courage to have a different vision. You needed the skill to bring all the pieces together, and you needed luck. And you know, he was very sort of forthright about that, because they caught a bunch of lucky breaks that came together to make that deal happen. And then, as you said, they caught some unlucky ones and it's sort of fallen apart. What do you think Anthony's message to Maryland Racing would be now?
I think it would be, honestly, to continue to fight the good fight. And I said this to you previously, we can't continue doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Somebody's definition of insanity. We have to be visionaries. We have to look at things that have been successful in the past and continue to incorporate those moving forward. But I think if we're going to be successful, and I mean this nationally, but also my heart is Maryland Racing is the most important to me. We're going to have to be forward thinking like he was, and continue to, if I can go back to the parable of the spoons, we need to feed each other. We're the only way we're going to be successful is working together and with a lot of luck. He always was optimistic. He was always hopeful that if we could incorporate some of these changes, be creative, think outside the box. And Anthony brought to Maryland Racing what analytics does to sports and football and baseball. He combined what was successful in the past with a new way, a modern technology of moving forward, both in terms of making the industry better and making it safer for the jockeys and the horses.
and he'll be remembered for that.
All right. Michael Algio, former chairman of the Maryland Racing Commission, thank you for joining us here on Off to the Races to talk about your friend Anthony Manganiello.
Hey, Frank, listen, thank you very much, and I mean this very sincerely. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about Anthony. Just a wonderful human being. He will be missed. Thank you.
Interesting stuff there from former Maryland Racing Commission Chairman Michael Algio, remembering his good friend Anthony Manganiello and what might have been.
And they're off. It's Timonium.
With those words, track announcer Dave Rodman kicked off the Timonium meet Friday, turning our attention to today. Live racing at Timonium revs up 12:25. First post featured today is the 6.5 furlong, $75,000 Timonium Distaff. Going to talk with trainer Jerry Robb in just a minute. He's the trainer of Princess Kokachin, who is the 5-2 second choice on the morning line. I got to say, if this race holds together, it's the best race in Timonium that I can remember them running. We've got Rob's horse, Princess Kokachin, has earned over $500,000. Malibu Beauty for Gary Capuano has earned over $500,000. Kenny McPeak's scheduled to send in Ensemble Just. David Jacobson sending Self-Isolation from New York. So quite an interesting race, and looks to have a little bit of speed in it. Again, if there are no scratches, we'll find out later on Saturday morning. So if there are, I'm going to go with Response Time to win this thing for trainer Hammy Smith. Jairon Barbosa going to be in the irons there. This one, a little bit of a awkward trip last time out, but ought to be able to sit off the pace and make a run. I'm going to go 4-6-3-1 in the Timonium Distaff. Let's talk with the trainer, John Robb, veteran Maryland trainer of Princess Kokachin, right here.
John, thanks for joining me on Off to the Races. Let's start with Timonium. Princess Kokachin in the Timonium Distaff Stakes. You were probably thinking you're going to tower over this field, but this is a heck of a field you got teed up here.
Yeah, when I entered, I expected I'd be the only speed and these turns would benefit her, but after seeing it, I'm not the only speed. I may be the fastest, but it may hurt her getting the lead, but we'll have to see how it shapes up.
How's she coming into it?
She's coming into it very good. She's coming in off a win and always shows up.
I don't think she's run here before, has she?
No, I don't think she ever has.
But you think she'll like it here?
Well, speed and Timonium, they go together.
Yeah, for sure. Now, speaking of Timonium, you've got a bunch of horses entered this weekend. I think 16, I counted.
I think I put another 10 in besides the 16. The book just happens to fit with the horses that I have ready now. Laurel's all turf. I don't have a lot of turf horses, so they've been waiting to run. So,
you like racing at Timonium?
I do. I've been racing here my whole life.
Did you come here? You grew up in D.C., right?
No, I grew up in Mayo, Maryland.
Okay.
And we came here quite a bit.
Okay. So you go way back with the big team.
Yeah, I was rubbing horses working here for James McGill.
Is that right?
Yes.
When was that?
In the 70s, like 1970.
Okay. So was that when Timonium was running the 42 days?
It was.
The whole thing?
It was.
It's hard to imagine 42 days of Timonium now.
Well, back then it was the fair meets everywhere. We went from Marlboro, Timonium, and then we went Bowie. Marlboro had the Bowie meet. I mean, you always jumped around. You never stayed in one spot like we do now.
Which could be what the future looks like a little bit more, depending on what happens here in Maryland.
Yeah, who knows? Wish I did know.
What is that like for you guys, that level of uncertainty?
It's very hard when you have a larger outfit like I do, it's hard to plan for anything because I know when Pimlico closes, I'm going to get cut stalls. Originally, I wanted to bring my Delaware outfit to Pimlico, so that's not going to be able to happen. So I'm going to have to cut back in the horses.
Are you really? So they're not going to be able to accommodate everything you got?
No, 40's the limit.
Okay.
Anybody more than 40 is going to be in trouble.
Are you able, you and your wife Gina have a farm, are you able to train off the farm?
I have the exercise machine there, but mainly that's just for the brood mares and the babies and the layups, but we don't train anything there.
Okay. All right. So some decisions coming down the pipe for the Rob Barn.
Yeah, I told Gina I might have to cut her.
You're still married, though, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not for long.
Right. Now I got to keep the best horses is the way I got to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And you've had a pretty strong barn the last few years.
I have. Yep.
All right, I wanted to, another issue that I know has really been on your mind a lot recently. There were a lot of breakdowns at Saratoga, which followed Churchill, which followed Laurel, which followed. And I think you believe that this may have something to do with shoeing. So why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, I really believe with all the breakdowns. I mean, it started, well, it didn't start, but it hit the headline news at Santa Anita when the track was wet. And I know we used to have a 4-millimeter toe on our shoe. Before that, everybody ran with turndowns and stickers, you know, which gave you plenty of traction. Some people thought maybe too much traction, but it would jar them. But with all the breakdowns happening now, since then we went from no stickers, no turndowns, 4-millimeter to 2, and now straight Queen's plate on the turf. And I think they've lost their traction. I think they're overextending now, and I think that's what's causing a lot of these injuries. They're hitting the ground instead of biting in, they're sliding.
So was the argument against the longer, you know, the turndowns and the stickers, was that it was like too much traction and they were coming down too hard on the joints?
I think it originally started that it was tearing the turf up too much. Mm-hmm. I know we went from 4 to 2, and it was the jock's guild. They thought that the it was causing horses to clip heels because the toe stuck out a little farther than the other one.
Right.
Plus, if a jockey went down, it'd be dangerous to have a large toe grab if they got stepped on.
Mm-hmm.
That was the original thought, to go from 4 to 2. And then, you know, you put a 2-millimeter shoe on you and train for a week, now it's 0. You know, wears off quick. You know, so they're running with no track, nothing to stop them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, really, I think that has a big part on all the breakdowns that we're having all around the country, not just here.
You think it's the kind of thing that horses will sort of accommodate, like get used to, or is it the kind of thing that we're just going to keep seeing this over and over?
No, if you ever watch a horse when they hit the ground with one leg, the leg actually bows back a little bit. Now, if you put slippage into that, now it's bowing twice as far as it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's when I say overextension, that's what I mean. And that and the combination that we don't get to run like we used to. Now you're lucky if you run once every 6 weeks, once a month. So we're overtraining them. We got to work them a lot to keep them fit. And
mm-hmm.
So we're working them twice as much, and there's no traction.
We're talking with trainer John Robb here, veteran Maryland trainer. And talk about the, you know, you just mentioned we don't run as much as we used to. So you got to train them to keep them fit. Why do you think that is worse for the horse than running races more frequently?
Because when the horse is running, he's more focused on what he's doing than he is in the morning when he's breezing and there's horses all over the place in all different directions. It's just so easy to take a misstep when you're not paying attention. All it takes is a little misstep and they sprain something, and then that causes them to get off of that, and then they might break something else.
Right.
It's just a snowball effect.
It sounds like if you had your druthers, well, let me ask, if you had your druthers, what would you do on the shoe issue?
I would go back to the 4-millimeter just to see if it did work, just to try it. And I would also fix the book to where these horses run in 3 weeks instead of 6.
Is that you and I have talked about this over the years, and it's a common lament among trainers. Is that a book problem or a horse population problem, do you think?
It's definitely a book problem. It's not a horse population problem. What has happened is they've cut the categories into so many different races that you can't fit them all in 3 weeks. So you need 6 weeks to get all the categories in, and then half of them don't fill anyway.
Yeah, and I would guess a lot of horsemen then, they're waiting for just the right one to come up, and maybe don't want, I don't want to go in this never 3 because I'm a never 2. And
well, you have to do that because we're all in the claiming business. And if you run a horse out of the wrong spot, somebody's going to take it and make you look like an idiot by putting it in the right spot.
Right.
Yeah.
When did the problems with the book, in your opinion, start? I mean, I remember owning horses like 15, 18 years ago. And it was pretty reliable. Like, my race comes around every three weeks, sometimes four, but it comes around. I know it's coming around. It seemed like it was there.
It started when we had too much racing, and everybody tries to track horses from the other tracks. So they'll ride a 9 wins of 2 life or 9 wins of 3 life, or now we even have the A other thans and 2 other than optional claim.
Mm-hmm,
you know, which just splits them up too many. So you end up with 3 in every race instead of, if it was a straight 25,000, you'd have them all in there. You know, we would run them where we thought they belonged, and if that didn't work, they'd drop them down a notch.
Mm-hmm.
But the menu is just too big. It's like going into a diner and you can't figure out what you want to eat.
Right. Do I want breakfast? Do I want lunch?
There's 40 pages of food.
Right, and you got to get, now, yeah, for horse racing, you got to jam more into the short menu. So you go back to the 4-millimeter shoe. Is that a HISA rule, the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority?
The no turn downs, the queen's plate, that's all a HISA rule now. Prior to them, I think it was a jock skill rule that went from 4 to 2.
Okay. Now, you've been outspoken about this, but I haven't had you on the program before. I would say you're not the president of the HISA fan club. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I'm all for regulations, and I'm all for uniform regulations. But they need someone on their board making these regulations that knows something about a horse. I mean, the Lasix thing is a big thing that kills me. I was around before we had Lasix, and I've been around with Lasix, and it's bad for the public, it's bad for the horse, it's bad for the owners and trainers. If it's pot luck, will they bleed today or not? And that's what it is if you run without Lasix.
How, I know they say just about every horse bleeds sometime in their, you know, in their life or career. I mean, what, in your, from having done this a number of years ago when you didn't have Lasix, like, kind of what percentage of horses in your barn would you have said, like, Lasix allowed this horse to compete and he wouldn't have been able to without it?
90% of them.
You think 90%?
Now, when I say compete, if I'm on Lasix and I'm not bleeding, I'm going to run to my true value. Let's say it's 25,000. I'm going to run to that if I don't bleed. If I bleed, I might still be able to compete at 5,000, but I can't compete at 25.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference. And if you look at the stake races around the country for the last couple of years, they're 4 horse fields because no one wants their horses to bleed. Once they bleed, then it's hard to stop them from bleeding. 2 to 5 shots, not finishing races. I mean, these horses are bleeding. When you see stake races, you can look at these stake horses and see where they run real bad, and you'll look over and say, oh, he wasn't on Lasix that day.
Right.
I mean, it stands out to me. I really think that's the biggest harm of all. Forcing no
Lasix is the biggest one for you.
To everybody. Yeah. To the better, to the horsemen, to the horses, to everyone.
All right, we'll leave it right there. John Robb, thanks for joining me here, and good luck with Princess Kokichin and with your battalion of horses you're running here at the Big T.
Thank you. Well, we're 1 for 1, so we're going to try to keep it up.
Sounds good.
All right, that'll do it here for us on this week's Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us. We do appreciate it. Thanks, too, to our show's supporters. Those include Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, True Valor, standing at Northview Stallion Station, and Wanamakers.com, online horse auction site. Thanks to all our guests on today's show. Today we featured trainer John Robb, Seth Marrow from Racing Across America, former Maryland Racing Commission chairman Michael Algio, and Liza Hendricks of Wanamakers.com. Keep up with racing and breeding all week long on The Racing Biz, TheRacingBiz.com. You can tune in next Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive to hear the independent voice from Mid-Atlantic Racing and Breeding. My name's Frank Vespi. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you in the winner's circle.